The Right Question is funded by the Steele Reese Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
Did you use real names in this memoir?
I used my own names for real people. And I did that partly to protect the privacy of those people, but also to emphasize, as I did in my first memoir, that this is really only one person's perspective. And, you know, where we live inside our own minds is our real life. Other people come into our lives, but I wanted to emphasize that this was my version of my experiences with those people.
Welcome to The Right Question, a program that features writers from the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman talking with Susanna Sonnenberg about her second memoir, She Matters, A Life in Friendships. Shortly after your first book, which was a memoir about your relationship with your mother, shortly after that was published, you told me, quote, "If I had known what it was like to write it, I wouldn't have done it. It was really depleting, exhausting, a painful experience." Do you feel the same way about She Matters?
No, and it's funny. I find, well, now, having published two books, I find that each one was a completely different experience for many different reasons. It's really intimidating to start a second book, especially if you feel that you've poured everything that you have into the first one. I wasn't really sure when I started where I was going to go and what the end result would be. And I think you develop a relationship with your book while you're writing it. Your book tells you how to write it while you're writing it. That's been my experience. And as with people, my relationship to each book was totally different. I was not depleted in that same way writing this book. It was still, you know, consuming. I thought that it would go faster, but first my father died and then my mother died while I was writing the book, and that sort of knocked me off my game. And it took me probably a year longer to write it than I had planned.
Several times you mentioned that in hindsight, you felt like you might have been substituting various women in your life for your mother, that you were looking for some kind of closeness. Describe a little bit about how that played out in relationships and what happened when you kind of went through and got older and realized that you were looking for comfort there.
Well, the first way I would say that it played out was that I was very early on, I was attracted to women with big personalities, as my mother had. It was a way that I knew of being with another person, another woman. And often those people were very self-centered and dramatic, but the friendship couldn't be sustained. I had a part in that too, of course. But later, in my later life, once I had a child in my early 30s, and from then on, I really began to appreciate the way that women nurtured each other and the way that they supported each other. And I still wasn't, I still never felt really confident and capable in myself of giving that or receiving it. But I was trying more. I was aware more of the value of it. And I like to think as the book progresses, the friendships become more complex. They become longer in duration. And I like to think that some of those at the end really reflect a mutual support that I'm maturing, I guess, from needing a mother all the time, And I'm recognizing that obviously no one's going to provide that for you.
I noticed that at the beginning of the book, you had relationships with women who were older than you, maybe only 6, 8, 10 years older. Maybe early in your life, you were looking for a mother figure, someone who had already done the things you were going to do.
Yeah, and I think that that's certainly not uncommon in the way that we connect with other people. We do look for mentors and models. And that's certainly, as I talk to other women about their friendships, that's an important part of friendship when you're in your 20s, say. Yes, you have your peers, but you also have that woman who kind of takes you under her wing or keeps you from making the next stupid mistake. Or the one who's getting married and having kids when that's way, way, way on the distant horizon for you. And we're looking to those women to teach us how to be women. When we're children, we look to our mothers to teach us how to be women. And, you know, I do talk in the book about how my mother failed at certain basic maternal lessons. So I had to go elsewhere to find them.
Let's just clarify for people who haven't read your first book that your mother was an addictive personality who did outrageous things, inappropriate things, talked with you about sex when you were way too young for things like that. You've indicated in She Matters and in Last Death that your secrets were used against you, mainly by your mother, in childhood. So considering that fear, how have you been able to reveal so much about yourself in these books and still feel safe?
Well, the key is in who's in control of the revelation. If I gave a secret to my mother and she used it against me, I no longer had control of it. And I think it's not a small part of why I became the kind of writer that I am. Someone who takes internal and private experience and thoughts and turns it into art that can be read by other people, but I'm the artist. I'm the writer in control of how those secrets, I don't even consider them secrets really, but how those private things are told.
Let's hear a little bit of the book. Just the first few pages.
Patricia will be late. As I think this, with a tolerant fondness, she texts that she'll be late. It doesn't bother me. I've known her 18 years, and she confirms herself, the deeply known friend, which reminds me of love in its greatest warmths, its common comfort. I haven't seen her in months. After her father died a few years ago, she left Missoula with her family, took a job 2 hours away. Our email is sporadic and bright, not more than that. We have our work, our teenagers, family health concerns, etc. None of these intersects anymore. She comes to town once in a while, stays with her mother, and sometimes, last minute, we squeeze in a lunch. Otherwise, our correspondence has lapsed into late-delivered major news. My father has died in New York, where I grew up, and I've been dazed for months, home in Missoula, yet not home. I hunger all the time and nothing answers me. Absence the new habit, I am shedding people, no longer sure how to show interest, how to let friends care. But I need care. And Patricia's has always been keen, persuasive. With her sweet intention, she might make me visible again. Was she coming to town soon? I emailed. She was. And guess what? We're moving back. A flicker of gladness. We made a date, but her weekend changed. We had to postpone. That used to make me crazy. Patricia pulls into the metered spot as I am passing it on the sidewalk, and she waves hugely before shutting off the car, as if she can't wait to get out. The windshield frames her gathering ups, the strap of her bag onto her shoulder, familiar motion. In a second, we'll reunite, and she'll shower me with enthusiastic greeting. I remember there's a song we do. I can't sing. After I arrived in Montana, 27 years old, Patricia became my guiding, buoyant older sister. She jollied me along, made things regular when I found them a regional confusion. When we met, her encouraging pursuit met my ready affections. We each had one dog and one cat, one husband, well, boyfriend for me. Both of us were earning a little money as freelance writers. Our birthdays were close together. She delighted in these coincidences as if they were delicious and rare overlaps. Later, when we were interested in having babies, we wondered how it would affect our writing. We asked, where will we find the time? Not believing we had to worry. At one point, I had a therapist I liked and recommended, and Patricia started to see her too. Sometimes, our coats in our arms, we passed in the waiting room, which always amused us because we had steady plans with each other every few days. Hey, sweetie, she'd cry, her greeting big no matter the room. I didn't know you were coming on Mondays now. When she took a leave from her job at a magazine, she put me up for the interim position. Every morning, sitting in her chair, I logged her password into her office email account for the day's business. We had a long period of doubleness. Patricia embraces me, the musical surge of, hello, how are you? Her raised voice exclaiming, just getting away from the kids. Her mother's with them, she says. I try to match her and relate, which feels nice, nudges me closer, even though to me such family reliance is peculiar. I know, I say, some time to ourselves. But I embody strain. How are you? She repeats. I'm so sick of it here, I say. I don't want to look at this town anymore. Don't say that. I'm about to move back. That's true. I'm glad. Inside the bar, we debate tables. It's afternoon. I'd texted, shall we drink? She wrote back, hell yeah, which made me smile. She always had the bomb, gave me a glad heart. Music overhead, a call to a crowd that doesn't mind it. We are drowned out. Close to my ear, she says, where we can talk. I nod. God, it's good to see you. It's good to see you. I take her in, really. She looks older. I must look older. We pick a corner table with a right-angled banquette. The waitress comes and Patricia treats her warmly and agrees to the suggested wine. The waitress goes away for the wine and my whiskey. At first, Patricia's absence, as brutal as her unsold house, unoccupied a few blocks from mine, beat at me. I'd sent a card to her new address. Don't forget to write, I wrote, meaning it both ways. Don't forget you're a writer. Don't forget me. Gradually, such disorder righted itself. This was life. People moved. It wasn't, after all, disaster. You coped with it. And when I considered it, coping felt like a right step, maturity. We'd grown nimble with changes. Women handle the shifts, keep friendships afloat, in spite of all that other shit and demand, the being needed. We start our protocol, the updates of our children first. It's been 8 or 10 years since her children have had an impact on me, although I remember how the corral of new motherhood contained our friendship, limited us. When our kids were babies, toddlers, then starting school, we'd shared kitchens and rooms and cluttered activities. We knew the arsenic hour, as Patricia loved to call it, not yet dinner time, the house filled with doom and shrieks. And nothing worked, no entertainment, no fruit, no limits. We'd phone each other. I know, we said, back and forth, the din at our backs. We take turns. Does Daniel have a Facebook account? Does Tasha? Has he friended you? Do you recognize her friends? And I listen not for the information. I'll forget most of it by evening. The family's constant details enough, my tattered mind empty each night. But for what's at work in her heart and surfacing. We have different styles. Patricia starts with the reports. I start with mood. I pierce, hunt for the biggest truth, restless until I've divined it. People, new acquaintances, old friends, tell me I'm intense, sometimes too much. Are you never simple? A friend once asked, just wanting a hello. Patricia, light at the outset, asks questions twice. First for the information, propping that up like a painting against the wall. Then she steps back, asks again, mulls feeling. The eddy of her repetitions used to annoy me. I just answered that, I'd think. Aren't you paying attention to me? But deep knowledge has replaced irritation, wiped away the personal grievance. She is herself. She is like this. And I know myself, reflexively anxious that I won't be properly heard. In the security of true knowing, these traits can be set aside. She pours out details of her return, and I spark and lift. Sun creaks back over our mutual world. Next month, she'll be here for good. I hear her telling me the real estate logistics, lament the hassle of switching schools, and I offer encouragement, but I'm thinking me. I get Patricia back. Later, I note I hadn't offered help. In crude mourning, I don't feel competent at anything.
You've been listening to Susanna Sonnenberg read from her memoir, She Matters, A Life in Friendships. This is The Right Question, a weekly literary program that features writers from the Western United States. I'm Cherie Newman. She Matters is Susanna Sonnenberg's second memoir. She's also the author of Her Last Death. If you tuned in late, no worries. You'll find a link to the entire program at our blog, therightquestion.blogspot.com. Be sure to spell right with a W. And while you're there, go on over to our Facebook page and click like. Our Facebook fans have access to book reviews and poetry, as well as information about forthcoming books and other Western authors. After a short break, Susanna Sonnenberg and I will continue our conversation about writing memoir and friendships. Stay tuned. You started out when you were younger feeling very incompetent at relationships, but as your relationships got more mature, you were working hard at that, at being a good friend.
I was working hard, and I was often not succeeding. I was often messing up. I think one important way that I've grown is that I've become more generous toward myself about the messing up. Like, we're all going to do it. We're all going to behave badly at some point. We're all going to step on each other at some point in some way, as well as learn more and more and better how to care for each other, how to show true support and loyalty. And I used to try to be a perfect friend, but there isn't such a thing. I used to want a perfect friend, but there isn't such a thing.
You used to be more focused on what you got out of the relationship, too.
But isn't that partly a function of being a teenager or being 25 years old?
And not knowing exactly what you do want, just knowing there's this longing.
Mm-hmm.
You also wrote in that passage about intensity, how you were so intense. What have you learned about the dangers and joys of intense friendships?
I feel like if you are an intense person, you end up forging intense connections. What I've learned is that I can overwhelm people, and I've learned how to pull back and hold back, I hope. But that's something that I've actually been trying to learn for 20 years. I mean, I've been working on that for 20 years.
And in one way, it seems like, why should you have to? Because this is who you are. But I think you discovered some things about your particular brand of intensity that caused relationships to
combust.
Be over, yes. Combust, yes.
Yeah.
One thing that you point out in the book also is that no matter how long you've known someone and consider them to be a close friend, you don't know everything about them.
No. And also, importantly, you don't know what motives they have for their connection to you. You don't know what you're feeling for them. And, you know, in the end, I think all we can trust is our own perception and try to be open to the information we're getting about the other person. But no, you can't know what's going on. I write about a friendship where the woman, we'd been very close friends for about 6 years, and had shared a lot of secrets and intimacies and hard things. And one day she just broke up with me. There was no warning. There were no signs. And I spent months kind of going back in my mind over the history of our friendship, looking for those signs. And it was very hard to accept, which I did finally, that she couldn't have the friendship for her own reasons. I did blame myself a lot. And she told me it was my fault, too.
And, in an email.
Yeah, in an email. And I really wanted to take responsibility for ways that I had messed up or hurt her, but I couldn't match up my own sense of our friendship and the truth of our friendship for me with what was obviously her version of the truth of our friendship for her. Like we were operating in two different systems completely.
Even though you tried to repair that friendship, as you said, it didn't work out.
No, she tried to repair it.
Later.
Several months later. She tried to repair it, but at that point, I had been so hurt and so kind of undone by, you know, delving into the what happened of our friendship that I just couldn't feel trust again.
Mm-hmm. Which is a really important part of any friendship. What do you think is the most important skill for people to cultivate when they are forming friendships?
Well, I think listening is good. Respect, you know, showing respect for each other is good. Paying attention to the things that make the other person anxious or happy or whatever it is, you know, just registering those things along the way. I guess I would say that would be the foundation.
You've gone so deeply into friendships with women. I mean, there are men in this book too, but you've explored it so deeply. As I was reading, I was going, oh, yeah, I've had that kind of friend, and then this happened with that friend, and what happened to that woman, you know, that I used to know 25 years ago? It really made me think about my own friendships. Has that been a typical response with the book?
Yeah, people say that pretty universally. That they can't help thinking about their own friendships, whether their own role in a friendship or that friend's importance at the moment she appeared. You know, and I cover about 20 friendships in the book, and I chose them based on impressions that never left me. And I really asked myself the question, why is someone who, you know, why was this girl in first grade who barely spoke to me, why is she still in my imagination? Why does she still have a role in the forming of who I am? And so I don't necessarily take friendships where the person is your best friend or this was your college roommate for 4 years. Sometimes these connections between women or girls, they're sparks of electricity that are so important. The sparking is so important. And I think that's an experience that we all have and that we can reflect on people. And I don't want the feeling of reflecting on someone who was important and beating myself up because that friendship fell away. That seems to me a natural progression in our lives as our circumstances change, as we develop, as we learn ourselves better. But that doesn't mean that you discount the importance of the friendship.
Yeah, you were finding out things about yourself through these other people.
And really, that's, for me, that's the job of memoir. That is what I can explore with confidence and authority, and that is what I can give the reader.
So if the 20-something Susanna Sonnenberg showed up right now, right here, what would you say to her about friendship?
I would probably encourage her to relax. But the current Susanna Sonnenberg knows that you sort of can't tell that girl anything. It, in a lot of ways, reviewing periods of my life is so painful because, you know, with the wisdom of where I am now, I can see the mistakes in behavior. And I can see that she cannot see those mistakes and she's just going to blunder forward. You would like to stop her sometimes, but that's how we learn. That's how we become whole people.
Kind of like parents trying to explain to their kids why they shouldn't do something.
Yeah.
What else do you want to say about the book?
I really wrote this book as a way to answer. I wanted it to sort of answer the question, like, how do you know her? You know, when you're sitting having lunch with a friend and someone comes by the table and says, hey, how are you? What's going on? Oh, you look good, blah, blah. And they walk away and the friend will say to you, so who is that? How do you know her? And you will tell that story. Sometimes it's very condensed. Sometimes it's long and has many chapters. That's what I was trying to do in this book. Each chapter is that story that I would tell you if you said, oh, so there was this woman. How did you know her? And I wanted to say, this is how we met. This is what was important. This is what I gained from her and learned about myself and what I took away from the friendship. This is the narrative of the friendship in my life.
Mission accomplished.
Thanks.
I just wanted to let you know that some of your sentences I just thought were really outstanding. You know, and you can't go through a book. You can just read sentence by sentence, but I just wanted to read this one to you. I mimicked the flutter in her face, imitated her cadences as if I might enchant myself and transform into her, which would demonstrate how deeply I knew her. Just beautiful sentences all over the place.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, I try. I work hard on them.
Yes, I know. That's why I wanted to say I really appreciated them when I was reading the book. Susanna Sonnenberg was born in London and grew up in New York. Her essays have appeared in Elle, The Oprah Magazine, and Parenting, among other magazines. She lives in Montana with her husband and two sons. You'll find information about Susanna Sonnenberg and her books at therightquestion.blogspot.com. And while you're there, we'd love it if you'd join our Facebook gang and subscribe to our podcast. Thanks a lot for listening.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau, Lisa Simon, David Moore, and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Ostein, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. You'll find links to author information, audio, and our Facebook and podcast feeds at therightquestion.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.